So one of the things that I learned in talking with RFK was that the guy does what he believes. He doesn't say one thing and do another. And I asked him, I said, you know, I've watched a lot of your interviews now, anticipation of this dinner with you, and people attack you like right to your face. They'll say things that I know based on now my study of you are not true, or they'll say things that I can see are meant to inflame or agitate you. And you have almost no reaction to them. You don't take anything personally, and rather than react, you respond in such a grounded, powerful way.
Welcome to A Changed Mind, a journey into the topics that matter to you most. From the neuroscience and spirituality of mindset and personal growth to groundbreaking strategies for health, wealth, and relationships, to open and honest conversations about pressing global issues such as the environment, censorship, corporate capture, and democracy. Each and every episode reminds us of the certainty of the goodness of the future and provides the teachings, tools, and timeless wisdom inspiring you to create real lasting change in your life and in the world. If you've been desiring a sanctuary for your spirit, a place to go to tune out the distraction, negativity, and doom and gloom so that you can tap into the deep power, the vibrancy, and the potential you have inside, you're in the right place. Welcome to A Changed Mind. Hey, it's David. Just a quick interruption to your normally scheduled podcast. I've got an incredible opportunity for you. Big announcement that my book is now live on Amazon. A Changed Mind, Go Beyond Self-Awareness, Rewire Your Brain, and Reengineer Your Reality. If you've been wanting to take your personal growth to the next level, maybe you've done the self-help thing, but you're still feeling more stress or overwhelm or anxiety in your life. Maybe you've gotten to the next level of financial security or growth in your relationships or health or your business, but you've hit a new ceiling and you're really wanting to understand how to identify the resistance that is still inside of you that's shaping your experience of life and to let it all go and transform it so that you can truly feel free emotionally, spiritually, financially, and achieve your full potential. You've got to check out this book. I spent the last 18 months pouring all of the teachings, philosophies, tools, even processes that I've never taught before that have helped me go from a life where I was literally struggling to survive to a life now that I love in a system that lets me materialize the vision I have for my business, my family, my world without the hustle and grind and putting my spiritual growth and well-being first. So if you've been wanting a treasure map to the emotional and material promised land that life has waiting for you, take a minute to jump on over to Amazon, grab yourself a copy of A Changed Mind, or better yet, grab a couple of copies and give them as gifts to your loved ones. The feedback is already coming in. People are saying this is one of the most practical and powerful personal development books they've ever read. And I get it because everything that's in this book is exactly what I went through, what I learned, and what I used to change my mind. Check it, grab yourself a copy, and now on to your regularly scheduled podcast episode. Hey, it's David. Welcome back to A Changed Mind, a sanctuary for your spirit, a place where each and every episode I will remind you of the certainty of the goodness of the future. I'm your friend, your host, your guide, and man, am I so excited about this episode. I had a private dinner with Bobby Kennedy Jr., and I was shocked. I'm going to be sharing with you some of the shocking things that I learned in my conversation with him, some shocking things about Bobby Kennedy. And now this was not a charity dinner with 5,000 people where, you know, I picked up a plate at the buffet and I was sitting half a mile away from him. I was literally sitting in front of him for 2.5 hours, able to ask him questions about his policies, able to understand his story. And I got into this opportunity because I was doing vaccine research before I had my first child. I had heard a lot of different conversations and different opinions around vaccines. And this was, of course, after the pandemic. So my son at the time of this recording is 19 months old, a happy, healthy baby boy, Gabriel. And but there's a lot of vaccine conversations. So I wanted to do some research. And there were a couple of things that I became aware of. Number one, it was very difficult to find information
from people who were opposed or had concerns about childhood vaccinations. In fact, you can go onto YouTube right now and do some searches. What you'll find is a prolific amount of information that is supportive of vaccinations. And I'm not suggesting whether or not you should do childhood vaccinations or not, but there's a very, very limited, if any, information from people who have opinions that your child should be limited in their vaccination schedule. And by the way, this interview I had with Bobby Kennedy, this dinner, we didn't even really talk about vaccines. This is just sort of my backstory of how I found him. And I have to be careful about how I frame this conversation, especially on the YouTube platform, because we're living in interesting times, right? Where opinions have now been labeled as misinformation. Even your own personal story and what someone said to you could be labeled as misinformation. And we certainly want to adhere to the YouTube guidelines because we understand that if you're watching us, it's on their platform. If you're listening on podcast or Spotify, they tend to be a little less draconian about things. So everything that I'm sharing in this episode is not, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. I am sharing what I have read. I am sharing what I have heard. I am sharing some personal opinions. Make no mistake that my goal here is not any type of misinformation or guiding you to make your own decisions. But I found a book called Vaccines 2.0, and it was written by two doctors, and they took a very empirical approach. They laid out all of the data, and they basically said, hey, you make the choice on whether or not you want to vaccinate your child. They took every single vaccination, every single, let's call it, disease that was vaccinated against, and they broke down, number one, how serious is the disease if your child gets it on a scale of 1 to 10? What's the likelihood of serious illness or death? Number two, they looked at what the potential side effects were of each vaccine. Number three, and the statistics according to the CDC, as the CDC reported it. Number three, they looked at, and this was a really shocking thing to me, I had never considered it. They looked at the protection that the vaccine provides and how it wanes over time. And I was shocked to see, I keep using this word shocked, but this was just, there were so many things that came out of my journey to my private dinner with Bobby Kennedy Jr. that have just completely reoriented the way I perceive the world and reality. And what was mind-blowing to me was the short period of time that many of these vaccinations provided protection. So I looked at the schedule and I presented it to my wife, and we had had a conversation with our pediatrician, and our pediatrician said, listen, unless you do the schedule according to the CDC, we can't see your kid. And I said, well, can you help me understand why? And the doctor said, well, imagine your child gets whooping cough or pertussis, which one of the vaccines protects against, and he's sitting in the waiting room with a bunch of other kids. They're now exposed to getting whooping cough. And I said to him, well, yeah, but if they've been vaccinated, then what you're telling me is that they should be protected and there should be no risk. And then you could hear a pin drop in the room. And there wasn't really an adequate answer to my self-evident observation that, hey, if everybody else is vaccinated, then what's the problem? But at that point, I just told that pediatrician, thank you. And we looked to find someone who could better articulate the needs. Because I do think that the Western medicine plays a significant role. I'm certainly not opposed to vaccines, but I do want to make educated decisions about my child's health. And I'm very aware, and RFK Jr. has brought this to an even greater level of attention, that the organizations that we have relied on for trusted information are heavily funded by the pharmaceutical companies, and that's a conflict of interest, whether it's the American Pediatric Association. Kennedy even explained to me, which I'll get into a little bit later, around how a bonus structure works for pediatricians based on the number of the percentage of patients they have that have completed the entire vaccine schedule. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. That's just what Kennedy told me. But that's how I discovered him. I started doing research on the safety of childhood vaccinations. Now, I'm not talking about the connection of these medical products to autism or ADDD or ADD or ADHD. That's sort of an offshoot of the conversation. I just want to make sure whatever I'm putting in my kid is safe and that I'm protecting him against things that are actually life-threatening. Otherwise, I don't need to be putting anything that's not born into my child into my child. That's my opinion and my wife's opinion. So everybody makes decisions for themselves. But what I found was Kennedy, who at that time was very outspoken about what was going on with COVID. He was suggesting that the science behind the vaccine was not good science. It was not the type of science that we've used over the last, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years as a standardized test before we put medical products out there into the world. And then I kind of went down the rabbit trail and discovered that he had been a strong proponent of taking a deeper look at childhood vaccinations because he believed that there could be a correlation between vaccinations and the significant increase in number of vaccinations on the schedule. I think it was around 1989. And at that time, this sort of prolific increase in the curve of these challenges that children were having, right? I mean, you can even hear me as I'm going through this. I'm trying to think of the right way to say this, right? But specifically the significant rise in autism, you know, ADHD, ADD, a significant rise in childhood allergies. And what he was suggesting was there's something ubiquitous, right? Whether it's medical products or not, whether it's glyphosate from Roundup, which is the weed killer, whether it's some sort of other environmental toxin, we saw the increase globally. And a lot of people have suggested, well, we just didn't know how to test for autism earlier. And one of the things Kennedy shared at the dinner was, yeah, but we go and we test autism now and 1 in 10,000 70-year-olds have autism and 1 in 34 children have autism. So you can't deny that type of statistic. And so I just started following the guy and I appreciated his passion. I liked the way he thought about things. I didn't know whether or not I wanted to vote for him for president. I've been checking out his Instagram feed and him talking a lot about the crisis at the border and how he would solve it and talking about the war in Ukraine and how he would end it and his opinions on Israel-Palestine, which, you know, I don't necessarily agree with the guy on all of his different perspectives. Him really bringing to light what's called corporate capture and how corporations have effectively controlled non-governmental organizations and even governments. And that's nothing new, right? Like, I think if you're listening to this podcast, you understand that lobbying is a problem, that corporations have an influence over our government, that it's an issue that so many of our congresspeople hold stocks in the companies that they're making legislative decisions around. And there tends to be a pattern between decisions that are favorable to these companies that the congresspeople hold, or even seeing congresspeople knowing that there's some legislation that's going to be passed that's going to be detrimental to a stock that they hold, and shorting that stock, right? So these are issues that need to be addressed, and we need to have some sort of election reform and lobbying reform. A friend of mine called and said, hey, I was invited to, I'm going to a fundraising dinner for RFK Jr. And I said, oh, can you get me into that? Like, I'd love to actually hear firsthand from him, because what I was seeing was that there were a lot of people who had a lot of opinions around Bobby Kennedy Jr. who never actually listened to what Bobby Kennedy Jr. had to say. There's a phenomenon that's taking place right now, where I think more and more and more, and perhaps social media has something to do with this, we become very passionate in our opinions without an adequate correlating amount of energy and effort that we that individuals put into seeking the truth. In fact, a lot of these very important issues that are existential or determine the quality of life of ourselves and our children, we're sort of treating like sports teams, where we just pick a side and then we just defend the side, even if new information comes up. And I think we saw that with the debate between the Wuhan lab leak and the natural origins debate. And again, we're seeing this other phenomenon of censorship where, you know, you had leading virologists like Brett Weinstein. I always get them confused, Brett and Eric Weinstein, but I think it was Brett, whoever the virologist is, because the other one is not a virologist. You know, world's leading experts coming out and saying like, hey, we don't think we have any good science here on this natural origins. The virus jumped from some bat or some pangolin into a human being. And we've got a lot of data over here that suggests that this was gain of function research and that this was built in a lab. And they were censored and shut down and ostracized from the scientific community that they were a part of. And so there's a lot of odd things going on right now. And I wanted to get closer proximity to hear how Bobby Kennedy was thinking about these things, because I had also read his book, The Real Dr. Anthony Fauci, and I won't necessarily share my opinion on it, but it was seemed incredibly well-researched, and it is a best-selling book. Millions and millions and millions of copies have been sold, and it was very well laid out. And what I liked about RFK Jr. was how well he lays out the case. Whether you agree with him or not, whether the things he's saying is accurate or not, what I found is most other people don't lay out a case. You know, like if I'm watching the legacy news media, they're not really making a case for anything. It's just really quick talking points and things that sound good when you say it fast. That's what I also experience out of Trump or Biden. You know, I got involved in really paying attention to politics when Obama ran and won in his first term, which I think was 2008. And he talked about hope and change. And my personal opinion is I think Obama weaponized hope and change. He told us that he was going to create hope and change. And a big part of that was draining the swamp, in particular, the financial cartel that was in Congress and had been appointed to a lot of cabinet positions that created the 2008-2009 financial collapse. Obama ran on this idea that I'm going to rout everybody out. And then what did he do? He turned around and he literally put the former head of the Federal Reserve, Tim Geithner, in charge of the U.S. Treasury. So, like, you know, and he just basically filled the swamp. And so that kind of broke my heart, but it also got me paying attention to a different kind of politics. And I felt like RFK was a different kind of politics. So my friend said, yeah, I can get you into this dinner. And then the dinner didn't happen. So I reached out to RFK's team directly and said, hey, I've got some friends. I've got some influencers. I've got a community. I've got people who probably want to hear what Bobby has to say. And I'm hoping to get Bobby on a future podcast. I would love to put together a fundraising dinner, an intimate dinner with 30, 40 people, and allow it to be a platform for Bobby sharing what his policies are and what his solutions are to the complex problems that are occurring in the world today, and which problems he views as the biggest problems. And so, long story short, we ended up in this $15 million home that a woman in Austin donated for the event. And I got to sit across from Bobby for 2.5 hours asking him questions and getting to know him. And I want to share with you what I had learned from that dinner. And the first thing isn't one of really the three big takeaways that I have. The first thing is who I experience him to be as a person. I experience him to be an incredibly generous and authentic individual. I asked him at the very beginning of the dinner, I said, you know, I've watched you in interviews, and one of the interviews that comes to mind is his first interview with Crystal Ball and her sidekick. I forget the name of the show, where Crystal Ball just attacked him. I mean, was just saying things that were factually inaccurate, which I guess the news is allowed to do, but nobody else is. And he just stood there, stoic, allowing her to speak, taking nothing personal and not reacting to a single thing that she said, but waiting and being responsive in a highly intelligent way. And I looked at that interview and I was like, oh my God, this is a different kind of human being. And then I found out he was in 12-step recovery and I went, oh, this makes a ton of sense. Because what's given me what little amount of emotional intelligence and emotional resiliency that I have, and what little capacity I've developed to be not reactive but responsive, and what little ability I have to not take things personally, because I still feel like I'm at the very early stages of the development of that type of deep character, was the 12-step program that I worked when I was in my drug, alcohol, and pornography addiction and recovery. And so I said to him, hey, I heard you've mentioned that you do meetings every week. He said, I go to 9 meetings a week. I hold 2 at my house. And I was like, that is incredible. Like, I mean, that's like going to super church. You know what I mean? It's like going to church every single day and connecting whatever the values of church give you. Except this church is a structure called the 12 steps that's designed to make you unbelievably emotionally resilient, connected to a higher power, forgiving, and living in unconditional love. That's what the technology does. And so I said, so how long have you been in recovery? And I think he said since 1983, 80 something. And I was like, oh my God, this man has been doing the work for 40 years. He's been doing some of the deepest personal and spiritual development work that's out there. And I said, hey, I watched that interview with you and Crystal Ball and your ability to like do, and by the way, it's not just the interview with Crystal Ball. It's whenever he's on any news show, they're like throwing him curveballs. They're throwing him fastballs. They're trying to shake him. They're saying, hey, you know, your family hates you. What do you think about that? And which isn't really true, right? He's got some family members that disagree with him, just like I have some family members that disagree with me. But there's always some, you know, odd rotation of spin that comes at him anytime he's in an interview. And I said, I've never seen anybody be able to just be so solid in themselves. Is that a result of the 12 steps? And before I even finished the word, the 12 steps, he laughed and shook his head and said, absolutely. So this is a guy who's done the work. And you don't have to agree with the work that he's done. I don't have to agree with the work that he's done. Maybe you put no value on somebody who goes to 9 12-step meetings a week. Maybe you have no idea what that even means. But what it means for me, which I'll impart to you, is that this is a guy that's unbelievably committed to the highest development of himself and the highest quality of character, and looking at his character flaws and working through them. This is also a man who has a deep connection with a higher power, whatever that is for Bobby Kennedy. He's incredibly spiritually oriented and driven and connected. And so right off the bat, those are qualities. If I was going to write down what I'm looking for in a president, those are the foundational things. Then there are issues. Pro-choice, pro-life, what you're feeling about LGBT, what do you think about the Ukrainian war? How are we going to handle AI? What do we do about the border? What about the $33 trillion in debt that we have? But I want to understand the character of someone. And it's the same way I would hire a CEO for my company. One of the first things you look at is values. And so I felt very values aligned with Bobby Kennedy. The next thing we got into was what he said was the... Actually, I want to share with you a quick story that I think speaks to how he talks the talk and walks the walk. He was talking about how in the late 90s, the U.S. Navy was bombing the island of Vieques here in Puerto Rico. So I'm broadcasting from Puerto Rico. I'm in my home in Puerto Rico, and I've been to Vieques. And there are these big signs that say, do not go onto the island, you know, warning active explosives. Well, apparently the U.S. Navy was using Vieques as... Again, this is my understanding. If my understanding is a little bit off from 100% accuracy, my intention is not misinformation. It's just telling you what I understand. And I'm probably wrong about half the shit that I talk about, but that used to be okay. That didn't get you banned from a platform back in the day. So my understanding is that the U.S. Navy was using it for experimenting, right, with weaponry. They dropped something like, I think, 21,000 bombs on Vieques over a fairly short period of time. Well, the Puerto Ricans didn't want the bombing to occur, right? It was almost like the U.S. Navy was like, well, we have this little protectorate state, this Commonwealth. Let's just go use it for testing that we wouldn't do here in the U.S. because if something happens to the Puerto Rican people, well, they're not really American. And I think Puerto Ricans have always been treated that way. And I mention that because it would have been very easy for Bobby Kennedy, an environmental attorney and activist at that time, to go, well, who gives a shit about Puerto Ricans? Like, that's not an issue. But no, he came down here to protest the bombing on behalf of the Puerto Rican people. And as a result of the protest, he ended up in a Puerto Rican prison for a month. He tells an amazing story about how he was in a little speedboat and the Navy's chasing after him, and he gets on shore and he's hiding in a house and he's hiding under the floorboards, and the Navy and the Coast Guard are screaming his name, looking for him, and then eventually the dogs found him. And it's like, man, that is a guy who, whether you agree with him or not, is taking the most extreme or the fullest amount of action you can take to embody what you believe. That's another thing that I would be looking for in my president. And then, you know, you for yourself, as we move into this next election, you can go, oh, well, is that who Biden is for me? Is that who Trump is for me? Are these people who are doing the deep personal work so that they can, in loving ways, respond to the most challenging of situations? And you hear Kennedy talk about this a lot in his campaign. He's like, my campaign's about love and unification. It's not about division. So already at the beginning of the dinner, the guy is starting to resonate with me. It just feels like this is someone I would want to be friends with. This is someone who I would want to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is somebody who I might actually consider coming in as a consultant or even running my company. And I personally don't feel that way about either of the other two candidates. There's no way I would let Joe Biden come in and run my company. And there's no way I'd let Donald Trump come in and run my company. A lot of people think Trump is a smart businessman. I think Trump is a powerful creator, but I certainly don't. I share some of his opinions. I don't share his values. I don't share the way he communicates with people. I don't feel that he communicates with love and compassion and understanding and tries to bring people together. And I think that's what's needed right now. So I say to RFK, and by the way, it's not about like who I'd vote for, who I wouldn't. I'm sharing my perspective on the landscape of what is one of the most important decisions that's coming up in our lifetime, which is who we're going to put in as the chief executive officer of the United States of America at a time that it is a business that is struggling and has a lot of external threats. I want to have the most qualified person in office. And so I said to Kennedy, I said, hey, what, you know, there's so many issues right now going on in the world. What is the biggest threat right now to America? What's the biggest emergency? And I was surprised at what he said. When you think about it, you've got China, right, as a competitive threat. You've got the Ukrainian war, all this talk about, you know, we've got to stop Russia. I'm not sure where this idea came from that Russia is trying to take over the rest of Europe. Like, I think making this a metaphor for what Germany did in World War II is completely inappropriate. We'll talk a little bit here in a moment about what Kennedy's thoughts were around the Ukraine-Russia war. You've got the Hamas and Israeli conflict. You've got the border crisis. You've got $33 trillion in debt. You've got environmental crisis and global warming. You've got, am I forgetting any here? Artificial intelligence. And Kennedy says the greatest threat right now to America is the chronic disease state that we live in. And he started sharing with me statistics. I'm at dinner, so I'm not writing them all down. But he shared some things like 40 to 60% of children are now obese. And when his uncle was president, that number was something like 4%, 6%, 10%. He said, so we have an obesity epidemic. And we have an obesity epidemic from his perspective, not because there's been some sort of genetic mutation that took place. And so obesity is a genetic issue and we need a drug solution for it, which is what a lot of people are suggesting now in the medical product world. He said, but we've got a nutrition issue and we've got an education issue. And he talked a lot about how difficult it has been to get big food out of the school system and off of the media, utilizing cartoon characters to lure children into begging their parents for whatever the sugary cereal of the day is. And he said, you know, these aren't even legal in some other parts of the world. They can't advertise. The product doesn't exist. But here in the United States, that's the tier one choice. He talked about the fact that, as I mentioned before, a lot of people say, well, hey, you know, autism, ADD, ADHD, we couldn't really diagnose those before. So it's not really fair to compare this curve that you can go look at. You can go on Google and you can look at autism rates over time. And you can see this massive spike around 1989, which is when the vaccine schedule was massively opened up. I think there was a doubling or tripling or quadrupling of the number of vaccinations that children would receive, live viruses, synthetic viruses at a time when their immune system is developing. And he says, and so a lot of people say, well, that increase is just due to better detection capabilities. He said, but okay, we've got the detection capabilities that we've got today. And one in 10,000 70-year-olds have autism. And one in 34 children have autism. I think the number is one in four boys have autism. And he said, you know, whatever this is due to, the bigger question is, why is nobody going after this as if it's a national emergency? Our children are sick. And he said, we've got sick care at the end of our life, right? And we've got that because, you know, we've got a sick care model. People aren't eating well throughout their life. They're not taking care of themselves. They're not exercising. There's no motivation from a research and finance standpoint to get people to do that. But now what's happening is they're coming into the world sick. And I got really upset and emotional when he talked about it. I mean, when he was sharing me the statistics and the conversations that he's been having with mothers and fathers and families whose lives are forever altered as a result of some sort of developmental or behavioral challenge or quote unquote disease or disorder, however you want to describe it, that their child has, how that impacts the family, how that impacts, of course, the child. It's heartbreaking. And he said, if I become president or when I become president is what he said, I'm going to declare a national emergency. And he says, because that's what it is. And he said, the challenge is that the media is not really talking about it at all. He said, but when you understand how the system and the structure works, you understand why the media is not talking about it. He said, Roger Ailes and Bobby Kennedy had a friendship. And he said it was an unusual friendship, but Roger Ailes had a child with one of the behavioral developmental disorders. I believe it was autism. And Bobby said, look at the data here. Let me show you how all of this data comes together. Let me show you the in terms of the potential cause of autism. Let me also show you a lot of the information around the inefficacy of some of these medical products that we're giving our children. And Roger Ailes, according to RFK Jr., looked at all of it, had a child with autism and said, I believe you, and this is 100% accurate, but if we have any news anchor who talks about this, I'm going to immediately get a call from Rupert Murdoch and they're going to be fired. Bobby said, why? He said, well, because the pharmaceutical companies pay for 50% of their salary. They pay for 50% of my salary. They pay for 50% of all advertising on primetime news. They pay for 30% of all advertising on news overall. And he said, so that money is our revenue. That revenue pays our salaries. And so what Bobby's suggesting is that the pharmaceutical companies are not only promoting their products through massive advertising and sponsorship to the American people, through the news, but they're actually controlling the content. So he's suggesting there can be no critical evaluation of any of these medical products because they're essentially financing media. And they're not just financing media, they're financing a lot of things. They're financing their own regulatory organizations. So the way the CDC model works is as pharmaceutical companies come in to have products reviewed, that's one way that the CDC earns revenue. And so the CDC is motivated to have more and more medical products reviewed and approved. And so if you've got a tight scrutiny and a tight filter and fewer products are coming through from an approval standpoint, that is in direct conflict with the profits of the CDC. And so we see this kind of conflict of interest across the board. And Kennedy said, you know, when I get in there, one of the things I need to do is I need to untangle this. I think we would all agree. I mean, you tell me. I think we would all agree that we do not want people who can benefit or profit from specific industries to regulate them, right? You don't want bankers on the finance regulatory boards or organizations. You don't want doctors, researchers, or pharmaceutical consultants or former pharmaceutical executives or people who are going to leave the regulatory organizations and they get a job within pharmaceutical companies to be on the regulatory boards. But that's what's happened. And that's what Kennedy means by corporate capture. And he says, so you have to understand the structure of how the swamp works. And, you know, one of the things he said was, I like Trump's rhetoric in some ways. You know, he said, Trump says he's going to drain the swamp, but he can't actually see the swamp. He doesn't know the dynamics of the swamp. And RFK has been dealing with the swamp for the last 30 years as an environmental attorney. I mean, this is a guy that took Monsanto to task around Roundup. And he said, the way that you have to do it is you have to conduct the research. You have to have an overwhelming amount of research that shows, hey, you know, this particular product is causing damage to many, 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 many people. He said, but the judge is going to say, well, how many research studies do you have that show this? And Kennedy said, you have to have at least, you know, 25 plus research studies. But the challenge is that those studies are funded by the same organizations that have now been corporate, have been captured by the entities and the industries that they're meant to control. And so that research doesn't take place. And so then no one can make the case that, hey, this product is harming people. And he said, so I'm going to redirect a lot of the research that's now going into the development of products into evaluating the products themselves so that we've got the accurate data. And then when the accurate data shows that products are harming individuals, then we're going to bring in the lawyers and we're going to stop the production of those products. So, but I was really, really surprised that out of all the things that, you know, he would put as a top priority, that that was the number one priority. But he said, if you look at the cost, and he had a great Instagram reel recently. If you haven't checked out his Instagram page, I recommend you check it out. But he was talking about, and again, these aren't exact numbers, but something like at the time of his uncle's presidency, 4% of our budget went to healthcare because we didn't have a sick state. And he said, you know, in the next 3 years, it's going to be 50% of our budget or something like as much as the entire defense budget. So you have to understand that this is a high profit business, being sick, that there's a lot of motivation for being sick. And there's not a lot of motivation for looking at how we might be creating sickness through the products that we're putting into our bodies. And there's not a lot of research going into how can we create wellness without more products. Carol and I don't usually watch TV. Carol's my wife, if you don't know. But we went and hosted this dinner in Austin and we were staying in the hotel room and my son clicked on the remote control and the TV popped on and we started watching whatever was on and it went to a commercial and I was shocked. Every commercial, there's 1 to 2 pharmaceutical commercials. And maybe that's just become normalized over time. If you're a regular TV watcher, like you don't realize that. But everything I was watching, when the news came on and the segment was sponsored by Pfizer, Sporting Game came on and the segment was sponsored by Pfizer. So I think it's right in front of us and Kennedy is pointing it out. And that's why a lot of people don't like him and are creating a lot of stories about him to try to shut him up. The second thing that we talked about were borders being an issue. And he went down to the border twice. And again, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but based off of recollection, it was something like we have 7 million over the last couple of years, 7 million undocumented illegal immigrants coming across the border. And so that in and of itself is an issue. It needs to be addressed. I think any intelligent person would say, hey, we should allow people into the United States and we should have a method by which we do it and we document them. But he said, basically, you know, people are pouring over the border and we don't know who these people are. He's certainly not saying every immigrant is a criminal. What we did talk about, which was concerning, I said, hey, you know, I had watched an interview recently with Dr. Phil and Joe Rogan, and Phil was talking about how the Chinese are buying up land in the United States in an interesting footprint, which happens to be around strategic military bases in the United States. And by the way, you can go on the internet and you can look all this up. That's a great thing about all this stuff. You can go look it up. You can go learn for yourself. And Phil also said that there's a significant number, like 30, 40,000 a year, of what's described as military-aged men, Chinese men, coming across the border. And the reason why they're described as military-aged men is because it's not, that's different than families fleeing a country looking for a better life. And what Dr. Phil said was they don't like to be spoken to. They don't like to be discovered. The other immigrants don't mind being discovered. They'll talk to you. They'll talk about a better life. They'll try to get some help in getting across the border. He said, but the Chinese guys don't want to be seen. And I said to Kennedy, I said, are you aware of this? He said, yeah, I saw it with my own eyes. And I said, what is that? Rogan asked the question. He said, is this just like an invasion that's taking place? And by the way, this episode is not meant to scare us into things. It's just to be aware and for me to give you feedback. You know, I believe in the certainty of the goodness of the future. I think all of this is just a process. I think Kennedy represents a new form of leadership, whether he ends up being president or not, and he's responding and kind of materializing as a result of these dynamics that are playing out in the world and these complex issues that have emerged. And I said, what is going on there? And he just looked me in the eye for a minute and he said, it's strange times. It's strange times. He said, I don't know what that is yet. And you know, I sensed that maybe he had some ideas, but Kennedy's reserved and he doesn't want to put anything out there that he doesn't have a certain level of certainty around. But I could tell it was very concerning to him. You know, why are the Chinese buying up significant amounts of land around strategic military installations in the United States and military-aged men in significant numbers are coming up through Latin America across our border? And he said, ultimately, we gotta shut the border down. He said it is a national security threat. And he said the idea that we're just allowing the border to stay open under this current administration really, frankly, should be heresy. He said it is a violation against the United States of America to not secure that border. The third thing we talked about was in the war in Ukraine. And my brother had a post recently on Facebook that said, hey, it's really simple and straightforward. We need to continue to finance the war in Ukraine. We have to support the Ukrainian people against Russia or something like that. And I messaged my brother and I said, hey, it's really not that simple. One of the things that, and it's not just Kennedy, other experts have spoken about this, is understanding the history of how we got into this war with Ukraine. And again, everything I may say may not be factually accurate, but it'll be about 90% accurate. And you can go take a look for yourself if you're interested. But Ukraine had a democratically elected government, which was pro-Russia. And the U.S., in tandem with the Open Society Foundation, George Soros' foundation, in tandem with a few other organizations, funded approximately $5 billion to opposition groups within Ukraine to overthrow the pro-Russian democratically elected Ukrainian government in 2014. This was under Obama, I believe. And what we usually call that is like a CIA covert operation to overthrow a government. It's kind of the playbook. So we don't like a government because they're pro somebody else. And so we begin to finance, weaponize, and strategically support an opposition group to overthrow the government in place. Now, this has become problematic. It's one of the methods that actually gave birth to Hamas as we were supporting Hamas early on against the Palestinian leadership at that time. I believe it was Yasser Arafat. Again, I may not get it all right. I get most of it right. So this is a strategy that we use that doesn't always work really, really well, right? We destabilize an environment. Now we're supporting a new government, but it tends to be a bunch of thugs. And in this case, we've all seen, you know, on the news, sort of these claims that it's a neo-Nazi government that is now in place. And so this group now then begins to kill ethnic Russians in Ukraine. I think there were 10 to 14,000 ethnic Russians that were slaughtered in two different regions. The U.S. begins to build up armaments, sending more weapons to Ukraine. Victoria Nuland, who was and still is one of the leaders of the neoconservative movement. This neoconservative movement are the people who believe that we should have our fingerprints everywhere in the world and anybody who doesn't agree with the United States should be overthrown. Basically, U.S. world dominance, although it's not really U.S. anymore. It's this corporate captured United States world dominance, powerful people world dominance. She testified to Congress indicating that we had weapons and biolabs in chemical biolabs in Ukraine. And then we start talking about bringing Ukraine into NATO. So if you understand the history of this, there was an agreement between Gorbachev and Reagan that NATO would not go past the East German borders. And NATO, led by the United States, has violated that agreement. And so, you know, NATO, which is essentially a global military, now is pushing up against those countries that still have not gone along with the model of the world that the United States is trying to promote. And so Russia drew a red line. And after their ethnic Russians were being killed and the pro-Russian government had been overthrown and Ukraine was being weaponized, they invaded Ukraine. Now, if you listen to the news, that's described as an unprovoked war. Okay. If you say so, it sounds like provocation to me. It sounds like if Russia overthrew a pro-US Mexican government, started killing expat Americans in Mexico, started developing or activating or continuing to support chemical weapons and biolabs in Mexico, and then tried to enroll Mexico into some sort of Russian military global body, we'd probably invade Mexico too. I certainly hope we would. So, you know, from the get-go, this has been mispositioned to us, and it's a complex issue because I believe if we continue to support Ukraine, what we're really continuing to do is provide money to weapons manufacturers who will put the weapons in the hands of young Ukrainians who are going to die. And I believe that one of the ways, although I'm certainly not an expert, is to stop funding the war. If we want to fund humanitarian support, that's great, but we got to stop funding military effort against Russia. And I believe Russia will actually back down. In fact, Putin said that in his interview with Tucker Carlson. However you feel about Tucker Carlson or not, or Putin or not, it's like you got to go listen to what people say. Go listen to the people who we're talking about. Don't go listen to people talking about the people who we're talking about. Go listen to RFK. Go listen to Putin. Go listen to these actual people. Otherwise, we're never going to get anywhere. But the question I asked Bobby wasn't about what do we do about Ukraine or how did we get into Ukraine, because I know he's shared this history of Ukraine. It was actually about the 2014 collaboration, supposedly, between the Open Society Foundation, George Soros's organization, and our government. Because there was another conversation taking place that many people are having right now, which is trying to get George Soros out of the United States. George Soros realized that he could gain power and control and influence at the local level versus the national level. So Soros has been funding and financing a lot of local elections, the appointment of a lot of local attorney generals and judiciaries, and that seems to map to a lot of the breakdown that we're seeing in the United States in cities that have just been destroyed. A lot of cities have been destroyed in the United States since COVID. I mean, I went to Portland. It's the shell of a city it once was. I went to San Francisco. It's hardly recognizable. There are areas of LA where you used to want to live that you wouldn't even want to walk through now. And, you know, there are these rules like, hey, you can steal up to $1,200 from a department store and nothing will happen to you. So there's a lack of enforcement of good laws that keep law and order that Soros seems to cross over and map to influence around. And the guy just seems to be like a modern day penguin. It's like he's creating these Gotham cities where crime can just run rampant. And the point is, if you look at the story of George Soros, my own conclusion is there's a lot of things to be concerned about. You can actually go watch his interview. I forget when it was. I think it was in the early 2000s, where he was one of his few long form news interviews where they asked him if he regretted having turned in the Jews. He was a Jew turning in other Jews during World War II and benefiting from it. And he kind of laughed about it and said, like, why would I regret that? You just watch the interview. It's very eerie. And then he talks about himself as being like a god. So, you know, again, very different than Robert Kennedy Jr., going to 9 12-step meetings a week, working on himself, developing a spiritual connection, hiding in a basement, trying to help the people of Puerto Rico to protest the bombing of Vieques, right? Or you've got George Penguin Soros. So why is our government collaborating with the Open Society Foundation? Like, if the Open Society Foundation and George Soros are influencing things in the United States that undermine the very fabric of our democracy and law and order. I'm saying if. I'm not saying that's the case. You can go do the research yourself. Why in the hell would we be collaborating with an organization and an individual like that anywhere in the world? Bobby looked at me straight in the eye and he said, strange times. we're in strange times. And I think what Bobby didn't speak into, but that he and I both understand, is that, and it's called the swamp, right? There are elements within our own government that are undermining our own democracy and our own freedom in the name of the corporate state. And those elements are collaborating with other entities around the world who have a similar objective. And I don't know why the objective is to destroy and undermine democracy and to destroy and undermine civil liberties and freedoms and to enact censorship and to control global currency and to control systems and to control people. I don't know what that motivation is. I can't really relate to it. I don't resonate with it, but it's strange times. It reminds me, if you've seen the Lord of the Rings movies, right? It's like everybody's happy in the Shire. That was kind of like America maybe seemingly in the 50s and 60s. And then all of a sudden the shit got weird because Sauron, the dark force, started moving around the world and there were activities taking place in Mordor and the ring was found. So we're in strange times. And in these strange times, I want someone who is highly intelligent, who's substantive, who's real, who's authentic to lead us. And I found RFK Jr. to be that guy. Not just to be that guy in terms of the best of the options we have, but to actually be that guy. And so I'm with RFK. I think it's really interesting right now that he's leading in the under 45 age group. I gave him a campaign idea, which was called Talk to Your Parents, like talktoyourparents.com, because it's the boomers that he needs to get. It's the boomers who are influenced by legacy media. It's the boomers who have been told that this guy is some sort of anti-vax evil lunatic. And I found none of that to be the case. He's more grounded and sound than anyone else I see running for president and highly intelligent. This is a guy I would allow to run my business. The other thing we talked about is just as a result of the media blackout, I mean, him not being able to essentially be on legacy media. Fox News had him on for a while when they thought that he was going to take away Biden votes. And then when he declared to be an independent and a lot of the Republicans were resonating with him, it was like, oh shit, we got to get this guy off Fox News. He's going to take away from Trump. And he is. I saw the latest polls, and I think if he can pull 5% from Biden and 5% for Trump, RFK is the new president of the United States. But nobody talks about it this way. Even our friends were like, yeah, who's that RFK guy? We're like, well, only a guy who's got 20% of the vote right now. And so you also have to talk to your friends. And that's why I'm talking to you about it, because I think this is important. Whatever decision you make, I honor that. We're about love here and acceptance and having different opinions. And you know, if this is something that you want to look further into, you're here because, you know, you think I have something to share of value to you. You like at some level the way I process and think about things. I really like the way Bobby processes and thinks about things. So if you're interested, I highly recommend you check out his Instagram. You can go through a bunch of his Instagram reels. They're all on a bunch of different topics with his, you know, opinions on things. And then if you want to get more involved, you can certainly donate to his campaign. But I appreciate you letting me debrief my private dinner with Bobby Jr. I love you guys, and I'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's David. One more thing. If you want to go even deeper on everything we've talked about on today's episode, don't forget to jump over to www.davidbaird.com. You can find the link in the show notes and subscribe to our newsletter. A couple of times a week, I'm going to be sending you the latest episodes that we've released along with additional free trainings. You'll get immediate access to my free Mind Hack ebook. And go even deeper into all the tools, the technologies, the frameworks that have helped tens of thousands of people establish a changed mind. Don't forget to jump on over to the site, and I will see you in the next episode.